This episode of Zero to Travel is brought to you by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. With 7 drive modes, the Pathfinder's built for even the most epic journeys. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
It's only recently that we have all spent this time, so much time online, and that we've had basically every little thought that we've had or uttered in a public place for the entire world to be able to see for all time. And it's not natural. I think it all comes down to being able to allow yourself to visualize a future that is better than your present.
You just heard a couple clips from today's conversation with Corbett Barr, who was our guest, talking about his experience doing a digital reboot, essentially downsizing his digital footprint. And that's a question we're going to tackle today. Should you downsize your digital footprint? Should you have a more minimal digital life? And what does that mean? How does that look in terms of your daily life, your habits? If you're running a business online, is that something you can even do? And I think this idea of minimalism around your digital self kind of goes hand in hand with travel, because when you're out traveling long-term or full-time, you are essentially forced into minimalism. I mean, there's only so much physical stuff you can carry with you, right? But digitally, we can carry a lot. And even though it's in the digital world and we can't see it, that doesn't mean we're not carrying it around with us in some ways. And that is the core of this conversation, I would say, is how do we carry this digital burden in some cases? If it is a burden, how do you recognize that? And how do you go about stripping it down? Or if not totally stripping it down, just making tweaks to improve and enhance your lifestyle. And we are going to get some practical tips and frameworks in this conversation to help you do just that. We'll talk about creating space for yourself and any big decisions you have to make. Corbett shares some advice on living off of your savings, whether that's because you're starting a business or traveling, and how that can take a toll and how to deal with some of the anxiety that might crop up around that. And we also talk travel. Naturally, Corbett spends a good deal of time in Mexico every year. How did he end up there? What is life like down there? We get into all of that and much more coming your way in this wonderful conversation. Plus, I've got a nice little way to start each and every day that I'll share with you. I'm going to give a shout out to a nearby neighbor and a listener who dropped me an email the other day. And why to pay attention to your repetitive self, what that means, and what you should do about it, all coming up right now. So buckle up, strap in. Thank you for being here, and welcome to the Zero to Travel podcast, my friend.
You're listening to the Zero to Travel podcast, where we explore exciting travel-based work, lifestyle, and business opportunities, helping you to achieve your wildest travel dreams. And now your host, world wanderer and travel junkie, Jason Moore.
Hey, it's Jason with ZeroToTravel.com. Welcome to the show, my friend. Thanks for hanging out, letting me bring a little travel into your ears today. This is the show to help you travel the world on your terms, to fill your life with as much travel as you desire, no matter what your situation or experience. How are you doing out there? It's a pleasure to have this time with you, as always. Maybe this is your first time here listening to the show. If so, welcome to our incredible community here, the Zero to Travel listening community, the caravan. You are amongst friends. And I gotta say, I love this topic of minimalism, and we haven't explored too much around digital minimalism in this show. And like I said at the top, this is something that I think really directly relates to travel, because it's all about the daily experience of life on the road or at home. And our digital habits have a huge impact on that. And I always find I love getting rid of stuff. I just have a strong positive association with minimalism from the years of travel. I know it's from that, because before I started traveling, I never thought about my relationship with things. As I spent years on the road and realized, wow, This is so liberating to just not have a lot of things. The less things you have, the less things you have to take care of or worry about or pay for. It's just a great feeling. Now, of course, being settled down, living in another country, having a family, the stuff just accumulates. I've talked about it on the show before, and I was just this weekend, in fact, going through some things and getting rid of some things, and I love that feeling. And that carries over to digital things as well, I think, because these things, even though they're not something that we carry around in our pockets or look at in our homes or even in our backpacks or whatever, if you're out on the road, you're still carrying these things with you, right? Or we can. And I always hate that feeling if I randomly, say, check my phone or something, a time that I shouldn't be, and then I realize somebody hit me up or like, oh, I feel this responsibility. I got to respond to this person. And then it's just, I'm just kind of carrying that into the next moments. Instead of being present with the moment, I'm now carrying these burdens around, these things that I have to maybe reply to or get back to. And it's not healthy, right? We all know it's not. And I think even though we know that, we can all get into these unhealthy loops. And at other times, I know, speaking from my own personal experience, my relationship with technology, at times it's positive. It's used as a tool. Like right now, I get to use it as a tool to have a chat with you and to share something that can make an impact on people's lives. I love that about technology. The other side of that coin, of course, is the misuse of technology. And then we carry those things around into our daily experiences, and it all ties in now. And that's one of the things we talk about in this conversation. You can't really separate out your digital self from your real world self anymore, because it's all integrated. We all have the computers in our pockets, and all of this stuff affects our daily lives. And of course, if you're going to travel or you're out traveling now, it's going to affect your life wherever you are. So that's why this is all integrated into travel. And this is an important topic. And as you heard at the top, we cover a lot of angles with this. So I know you're going to get a ton of value out of this conversation, which I'm going to bring to you in a moment. Also, don't forget to stick around afterwards, because I am going to share a nice little way to start the day with you. I'm going to give a shout out to a listener in this community and why to pay attention to your repetitive self. Okay, now let's slip and slide into today's interview, and I will see you on the other side, my friend. Yep. 251. My guest today recently did a quote-unquote digital reboot, deleting all of his social media and many of his blog posts, side projects, videos, podcasts, and more, despite the fact that he makes his entire living online. So he's here to share his experience, help us explore if you should consider downsizing your digital footprint, maybe even unloading it altogether. We're going to talk about lifestyle, business, I'm sure, plenty of travel, and much more. You can check out his work at CorbettBar.com. Corbett, welcome to the Zero to Travel podcast, my friend.
Jason, I'm happy to be here. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, man, I'm really excited because, I'm sure we crossed paths at the first WDS, the World Domination Summit.
Oh, okay. You were there, the first one. That was a pretty small one.
Yeah. That was small and magical. It was just to give context to people listening, it was this unique event that took place in, I guess, what was it, 2010 now or something?
Probably,
2009, something like that. Yeah, for me, it was awesome because I found out about your work and like a handful of other people, and that was the kind of the first time when I realized, oh, like I can do something online and earn a living, and it doesn't have to be a direct sales letter with yellow highlight and a red buy button. And you can be an authentic, real human being and just do something online. This is badass. Anyway, thanks for that inspiration back then.
Yeah, thank you. And thank God that all of that is like fading in the rearview mirror. There was a time when that was like the dominant form of, I guess it was internet marketing was what they called it, but now it's just kind of, you know, being a YouTuber or podcaster or whatever, it's totally possible. And now everybody kind of knows of someone who does it.
Yeah. And you don't have to rent a Ferrari and stand in front of it and take pictures to look like you made it.
I know. I've never even sat in a Ferrari.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to bring that up because, well, A, to say thanks, and B, just to, again, give people context on how long you've been working online and doing this stuff. And I feel like in that way, you're maybe one of the OGs of lifestyle business and internet entrepreneurship in the way that we're talking about. And yeah, I know you're living in Mexico part-time. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that first, because this is a travel podcast. And I think a lot of people listening, you know, we do like to focus on the lifestyle and figuring out. The thing that's fascinating for me with lifestyle business is figuring out how you can make your business fit into your lifestyle rather than the other way around. I feel like that's something you've been doing, but I'm not sure you can speak to that.
So, you know, that's actually maybe the tagline from my very first blog was something very similar to that. At least that was the central question I wanted to ask, was how do you make your work fit into your lifestyle as opposed to the other way around? And it all started for me, it was actually in 2009. My wife and I took a sabbatical road trip through Mexico. And I had been working in a quote unquote traditional startup, which was Silicon Valley based, you know, VC backed, long, grueling hours, and definitely not lifestyle focused. And that kind of burned me out, and the startup ended up sort of blowing up, and I needed like some time off. I needed to clear my head. So we decided to take a sabbatical, and it was like the best thing I ever did, because it completely set us off on a new trajectory. We came to Mexico, and I think I had this idea of life where you had to work really hard, save up a bunch of money, and then hopefully retire a little bit early so that you could do what you really wanted to in your life, you know, which of course would involve travel and so on. But when we came down here, we just met a lot of people who were a lot younger than you would expect, but had figured out ways to live in a foreign country for a chunk of the year. Maybe they were here temporarily, or maybe they returned every year. And it just got me thinking, and I started asking a lot of questions, and I started a blog sort of on a whim to have questions or to have a conversation out loud about those questions I was having about life and career and the relationship between the two, and why we all assumed that we had to fritter away like the most vibrant, active potential years of our lives sitting behind a desk somewhere in some city that has horrible weather in the winter, and you know, and take our anointed week or two of vacation every year.
It is funny how the blueprint that you just described, the sort of the, you know, we're going to work and then kind of live later, was just generally kind of accepted in many ways. For me, at least, it wasn't easy to kind of start questioning that right away. It took some time, and also getting around other people, that going back to WDS and some of these conferences and the people that I started meeting and realizing, oh, I'm not the only one that's thinking this way. And there's definitely power in community in that way. How long was the sabbatical for you?
Ended up being about 8 months. And it was all in our car. We had our dog with us, a 70-pound dog. We drove through a big chunk of Mexico. Then we returned, drove back up through the States all the way up to British Columbia, spent some time up there, and then finally returned to San Francisco, where we were living at the time.
And how long were you at the startup before you took the sabbatical?
3 years.
Okay. Yeah. So 3 years in startup world, is that equivalent to?
It felt like 10 years. I mean, really. And the crazy thing is, you know, I was a co-founder in that startup. And in my mind, entrepreneurship was this like magic that would cure all of the dissatisfaction that I had with my life and with working in the corporate environment, which is what I had done before. But I jumped into this startup with, as I said, you know, a co-founder. We ended up with VC backers, with a board of advisors, with angel investors, with employees, with an office. And I ended up feeling like I had way more responsibility and stress in that situation than I did before in the corporate environment. And so it was almost like I was taking a step backwards. And I guess you know, the reason was, again, in my mind, I thought, well, a startup gives you a bigger opportunity to make a bunch of money. And so maybe this will go well. And then maybe I can like decide more what I want to do next. And, you know, the truth is, we've all heard this, most startups end up failing, which ours did. And also, I think, you know, VCs, obviously, they make so many bets in so many different companies. So they're insulated from the ups and downs of what the individual entrepreneur feels. But for a lot of us, we don't have to take a YOLO kind of bet. We can do things smarter, more methodically, and earn a living first. And then if you want to take, you know, some bigger bets and start some interesting projects that you think can go somewhere, do that. But also you can put your lifestyle first. And, you know, after that sabbatical, my wife and I just agreed that we don't want to go back to that intense city lifestyle that we had before, and instead look for ways that would allow us to travel as much as we wanted to. And I just realized from that point forward, my business needed to be as flexible as it took so that I could run it from anywhere and so that I didn't have to work 60 hours a week if I didn't want to.
Do you have any advice for people that are having these types of conversations with their spouse or a partner or somebody that, you know, because you're sharing your life with somebody, you were married, still married. Yeah, just wondering what that experience was like for you. Were you guys on the same page or did it take a lot of conversation to figure that out?
And my wife is, we've been together for a long time and she has, incredible patience and, gives me quite a bit of runway. I have a couple of times during my career completely restarted. I have twice lived off of savings for, up to almost a year in each case while I was building something. And, you know, she has of course had concerns about it. And of course wanted to make sure that, you know, I was, thinking clearly and making good decisions, but also, she's trusted in me. So I thank her so much for that. And also, you know, this lifestyle that we live, we travel 4 or 5 months out of the year. Usually, 3 months of that is in a fixed place in Mexico. And then the rest of the time we're, in Europe or somewhere else that we want to explore in the summers. And she is an artist, a painter, and she has a studio in Portland. And so when we're away from home, she is doing other things. Like, you know, she can do marketing work and social media work and so on, but she's not actually making new paintings, at least not the kind that she would sell or bring back to a gallery or something. So, you know, it's a bit of a sacrifice for her in some ways. It can feel a little boring, I think, being on the road for a really long time when she doesn't have that much work to bring with her. Whereas, you know, here I am recording podcasts and doing all that sort of stuff when we're on the road. So, there, you know, there's a lot of conversation that goes into it. We've found that this is what works for us well now, but, you know, I'm open to anything. I think we both know that we love to travel and we both know that we love avoiding winter as much as we can. But aside from that, I think anything's possible.
Yeah, I can see you've got like glowing with a little bit of a tan from Mexico. And I'm here in the Scandinavia freezing my butt off. So I'm giving you a thumbs up, man. I'm glad somebody's soaking up the
sun.
But
you're over the hump. You're past the days that are 6 hours long or whatever.
That's
now.
Right.
You have summer to look forward to, right?
Yes, absolutely. Finally. Those times when you were living off your savings and kind of building the next thing, I wanted to talk a bit about that because obviously I would imagine there can be a lot of stress in that situation when you're building something and you don't necessarily know if it's going to work or not. But it's a balance between having that belief in yourself and your abilities as an entrepreneur, as a human, to kind of make things work, versus balancing and kind of trying to keep at bay the anxiety that might go along with that kind of situation. Did you find those times to be turbulent in that way? Or I don't want it to be a leading question, but I just want to hear about your experience and maybe draw out some words of wisdom for anybody else that might be in your shoes from that time.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you this, living off of savings the first time had a much greater impact on me and my mental and physical health than I thought it would. And that's because it was incredibly stressful, and to the point where, for the first time in my life, I was, you know, I think I was just in my late 20s working on the startup. We were pitching VCs, and it took over a year for us to find funding. And watching my bank account dwindle and feeling like wondering if maybe I had made a mistake leaving my career behind that was, you know, well paying and fairly comfortable. I ended up visiting the doctor because I thought there was something physically wrong with me. I thought I was having heart problems or something. And it turns out it was stress, and stress can do that to you. It can manifest in physical symptoms. And if you haven't experienced that before, it can be pretty scary. So it had an effect on me that time. The second time around, I was more comfortable with it. And I think now I have confidence that whatever happens, I'll figure it out. And so I'm not that worried about it. But you don't know the first time around. And this is why when people ask, or when people tell me that they feel like they just need to quit their job so they can focus on their side hustle to really make it work, I caution them about it. Because I think, you know, first of all, even if you have all the hours in the day to work on your own side project, it doesn't mean that you're magically going to be all that productive. You know, just because you have a corporate job that takes up, you know, 7 to 9 hours of your day, and then you have to squeeze in your project into a couple of hours, suddenly when the day expands to the full width, you find plenty of things to procrastinate on. And it takes a lot of focus to be driven every day as an entrepreneur. And I still have days where I don't get a whole lot done. But the other thing is that stress that you can feel after leaving your job and watching your runway get closer to the end. The runway is, you know, the amount of savings that you have divided by how much you're spending per month. And
it's a very real, tangible, measurable number, right?
Exactly. And so you might have a runway of 12 months, and maybe you feel great about having saved that much over your career. And, you know, you're going to give it your one shot. But watching that runway get closer and closer to the end ramps up the stress level. And I've seen so many people overshoot the runway and have to, you know, go back to something, freelancing or a career of some sort. And not that that's a bad thing, but, you know, I just encourage people to think about entrepreneurship as a long-term thing. It, you know, just because your first venture doesn't necessarily result in a big success doesn't mean that you won't see success down the road. But the ultimate goal is to be able to take more than one shot at it. I think most of us end up needing to take more than one shot to find success. So these days, you know, there are a lot of opportunities where you can work remotely, for example, and maybe you can scratch some of that itch that you have to see the world or live somewhere else and to be able to work on a side project at the same time. In my case, in the first go round, I actually convinced my employer at the time, a consulting firm, to let me go half time for a while, which eased the burden. We, you know, ended up staying in Mexico a lot longer than we thought we would because it's way cheaper to live here than it was in the States. So there are ways you can be creative. You can extend your runway. You can, you know, continue working a little bit, as annoying as it might feel, at least so that your runway is longer or maybe even unlimited. You know, when you get started, you can always jump into freelancing or something so that you actually bring some revenue in the door early. There are a lot of things you can do, but I would work on minimizing that stress because you never know how you're going to react to it. And in my case, it was a much stronger reaction than I thought. And I think most people end up having a bit stronger of a reaction than they would expect.
This episode of Zero to Travel is presented by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. From muddy jungle paths and snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder has the capability to take you to some of the most epic destinations on Earth. We're excited to partner with Nissan because our listeners know we love to celebrate the joy of exploring the world and finding the best off the beaten path destinations to visit. And there's no better vehicle for that than the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. With 7 drive modes, the Pathfinder's available intelligent 4x4 is built for even the most epic journeys, and it even has the best towing capacity in its class, up to 6,000 pounds so you can bring the fun with you. But Nissan also knows that it's not just about where you go. In a Pathfinder, the real fun comes from getting there. And that's something we love celebrating here on the Zero to Travel podcast. We believe that life is about finding that joy within the journey itself. And that's why we're thrilled to partner with Nissan to celebrate adventurers everywhere. So thanks again to Nissan for sponsoring this episode of Zero to Travel and for the reminder to chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures and enjoy the ride along the way. Learn more at NissanUSA.com. Intelligent four-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions. Towing capacity varies by configuration. See Nissan Towing Guide and Owner's Manual for additional information. Always secure cargo.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that, because what people see online isn't necessarily what's always going on behind the scenes with anybody, right? Mm-hmm. And the internet's the ultimate comparison trap.
The ultimate funhouse mirror where we all get to look.
Yes. I wasn't going to get to it right away, but maybe that's a good segue to start talking about what you've done recently, which is this idea of a digital reboot. Now, I'll just read a little quote from your website. You said, "I'm going to reevaluate how I exist online. I'm going to consolidate my online life and define a new vision for my next decade on the internet." Going back to lifestyle, that's more of maybe a lifestyle decision than anything, right? I mean, can we really separate our digital and our physical selves anymore at this point with the screen time and, you know, all of the things that are involved to work successfully online as an entrepreneur? I just wanted to hear about the digital reboot through that lens, through the lifestyle lens. Why do you feel the need to unburden in this way?
Yeah. Well, okay. First of all, the caveat here is that I'm a bit of a neat freak sometimes. And in my physical space, I need things to be organized and pleasingly designed and so on. And I think in the digital space, I had neglected that for a while and felt like I had a lot of digital baggage out there, you know? And so part of this was just a neat freak side of me realizing that I wanted to clean things up, sort of a housekeeping in a way. But, you know, on the bigger, more important side of things, I think that it's only recently that we have all spent this time, so much time online, and that we've had basically every little thought that we've had or uttered in a public place for the entire world to be able to see for all time. And it's not natural, right? For all of these little things that we think to exist forever. There was a time when creators were people like artists and authors and so on, or filmmakers, who you really only saw from them something every year, right? In the case of an author or a filmmaker, or, you know, a painter, you would see their show like once a year or something. And that was the finished work. That was the result of their best thinking, their best effort, and so on. But now, you know, it's a great way to build an audience showing your work and working sort of in public. But I still don't think that we've come to grips with just how messy that is. And, you know, I was often inspired by artist talks. We heard this two or three times, my wife and I, at artist talks, where an artist who was sort of reflecting on their career would look back and say that at some point my entire studio burned down. And this is like more common than you would think, especially because, you know, you've got flammable solvents and things in your studio and so on. And just because fires happen, and artists a lot of times are in buildings that they've been in for decades, you know, that are maybe not as maintained as they should be. And you would think that this is this tragic thing that would happen to someone. But in looking back and reflecting on it, they universally said that this actually was a positive thing because it allowed me to start fresh and to achieve things or to produce things that wouldn't have been possible if I felt beholden to the style and the technique and the things that I'd built in the past. So I started wondering like what the digital equivalent of that was and where this all went over time. And it just got me thinking, like, why do I have to have all of these posts out there on Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn and every other platform out there? And I also started recognizing that I was sort of playing that comparison trap and almost mimicking what other people were doing in social media in a lot of ways, and not really feeling like it was me. It was more like I felt like, as a digital creator, that I had to be in all these places and I might as well sort of try doing what other people were doing and see if that would work for me. But we start on all these platforms, maybe out of curiosity, and then years go by and maybe we haven't put any strategy or any thought into it. And we just end up going through the motions on all of these different places. And those platforms have desires for us. They want something from us. They want our attention so that we're spending more time there. They want us to produce more content so that we're attracting more people there, because they all have a profit motive and we can't blame them for that. But you can easily get away from the reasons that you should be on those platforms in the first place. And that is, you know, hopefully either for entertainment purposes, maybe you feel good by being there, or because it's serving some sort of a bigger business or life goal for you. And in many cases, neither of those were being satisfied for me. I didn't feel good spending time in these places, and I didn't later feel great about the time that I'd spent there. I would often leave sort of, and maybe it's because of the comparison trap or other psychological reasons, I would feel worse about myself after closing the app than I did before I opened it. And I also found that just if I really dig into my business results, spending time on a lot of these platforms wasn't serving a purpose. So I took a couple of steps. The first was to evaluate all of these different platforms and decide which ones I was getting the most from. The second was to delete all of the posts that I had on those platforms, and then to give myself time to kind of sit with that, feel what it was like, and decide if I wanted to go back and re-engage in those platforms. And for me, the answer ended up being that I really dramatically consolidated all of my social media presence to just one platform. And it doesn't matter what it is. For me, it happens to be Twitter, because that works for me psychologically and from a business standpoint. But just consolidating down so that I didn't feel pulled in like five different directions, and so that I could more carefully curate what I was doing in that one place. And that's been a really freeing thing to me, not to feel like I have to show up and check the box here and go through the motions there. So I don't know if this is right for everybody, but I've really enjoyed it. It's been a bit of a digital reboot for me. And I have seen a lot of other people thinking about doing the same thing and just sort of questioning, like, why am I on all these places and what am I getting from it?
Yeah. How long has it been since you kind of did the clean
sweep? It's been coming up on 6 months since I first deleted all of the posts, all of the content. And it has been just about a month or a few weeks since I have deleted a bunch of accounts, including LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and some other lesser ones.
Okay. So, well, let's talk about the last 3 weeks in Mexico then. You have a lot of experience down in Mexico to compare that to. How has it been? Have you seen a difference in the way you exist in a daily basis in terms of habits or lifestyles? We've talked about that, or anything.
Yeah. Well, this has coincided with making a bunch of decisions and feeling like I have a North Star that I'm working towards in my business. And that's felt really good. And I don't know if leaving those platforms has led to the clarity of mind that allowed me to make those decisions, or if just forcing myself to start making some decisions, which included both of those things, is what has led to this clarity. But I've definitely felt a lot of clarity. It has led to a lot of real conversations with people, because I'm talking on podcasts. People are curious in person. about it and wondering if this might not be a good path for them. So it's led to more human connection, which I really appreciate, and less worrying about how many likes I'm getting on some post somewhere that doesn't really endear me to anyone. I also have really enjoyed people not necessarily knowing what's going on in my life. I always felt odd about that. Like, even when it's like a good friend that you're catching up with and you say, you know, what's been going on, and you tell them, oh yeah, well, we went to such and such, and they say, oh yeah, I saw on social media. I almost felt like, there's a creepiness factor there, but, people feel like they have to say, I saw it on social media, because they want you to know that they're following your feed or whatever, and that it matters to them. But also, it just kind of took the wind out of the conversations. You know, because what else is there to talk about? They already saw the photos.
And they already have an idea from the photos of maybe what the experience was like in some ways, right? It's hard to not get those impressions.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, I hadn't really thought about it in that way. It's really cool to hear that it's led to more human connections, which I'm sure was one of the intentions behind the decision. I agree. I mean, when you make big decisions like this, and I've talked about this on the show quite a bit, when people are saying, you know, thinking about deciding to quit their job and travel, for example, or something, even just exploring it kind of forces you to answer a lot of big questions, right? That are really easy to avoid on a daily basis. And with some of the stuff that you're talking about, it's so easy to fall into the habitual daily routine of, you know, like you said, checking this, doing that. And really, to me, it seems like part of this is, it's not just untethering from some of the digital stuff and I don't know, unburdening yourself, I guess, in some way, but it's also maybe releasing yourself from some of the habits that aren't serving you.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we all have to admit that there is this other self out there, this digital self, and you can't necessarily untether the two. I think there was a time a while ago where those two felt very separate, but now they're so interconnected. And evaluating your personal habits, you know, we all think about how much we exercise, how well we're eating, you know, what our social habits are, all that kind of stuff regularly in the physical world. And I think we need to do that in the digital world. And again, it's just so easy to go through the motions for a long time and do things because it's what you do, you know, it's how your day goes. But taking that time to step back and evaluate and ask yourself, how is the time that I'm spending here actually serving me? As opposed to, you know, the reality is that a lot of us tune into these platforms because the platforms are very manipulative and they have learned how to press your buttons and to get you to tune in because of, you know, deep-seated human emotions and fears of fear of missing out, fear of not being liked by the tribe, and so on. And so, you know, they prey on these things because, again, they want your attention. They want you to spend time on the platforms. And I think it's just very easy for all of us, you know, not to sound like an alarmist or like somebody who says that we shouldn't use social media at all, because there's obviously tons of value there and I'm still participating. But I think there is a matrix there, you know, to use the Matrix film. We're all part of this matrix and we all thought it would be us in our physical form somewhere, you know, that we weren't aware of, but really it's us in our digital form out there being pulled into these platforms and doing their bidding, clicking on things, uploading things, and so on, feeling like we might be getting some benefit or hoping that we will in the beginning, because that's the promise, right? We see people who are overnight famous on TikTok and we think, oh, I'm just going to jump on there and see what happens. And that's the promise and that's what draws people in. But at the end of the day, we're all just part of this massive click farm so that they can sell us ads. And that's kind of depressing when you think about it, that that's what's going on. So I just want to be really intentional about the time that I'm spending online. And I would way rather have a conversation with someone like you. I'd way rather spend an hour doing this than, you know, an hour just kind of going through the motions on some social platform and having those surface level connections.
Yeah, that's great. That's what I've always loved about podcasting, is you can just have a conversation. As this relates to business, I'm sure there might be some people listening and thinking, well, you know, I think I need this for business, or I need a big social media following for my business. And obviously you work online and you can share some of your projects so people have an idea of some of the things that you do. I'm just wondering how much that played into your decisions for what you were going to cut and what some of the fears might've been around them and if they were realized or not. I know that's a multi-tiered question. You're not supposed to do that.
No, I get it. I think I understand exactly what you're getting at. And, you know, one of the concerns I got from people when I announced that I was starting over was that, wait, you know, what are you doing with all of your valuable projects? Because I have blogged personally at my own site at corbettbarr.com for quite a while. And I have built up several businesses. The one that people know me for most is called Fizzle, which is a online community and training library for independent creators and entrepreneurs, people that are trying to earn a living blogging, podcasting, creating videos, and so on. And I really didn't know where all this was going when I started out, when I said I'm starting over. All I knew was I had felt stuck for quite a while in my career, if you want to call it that, in my, you know, my work life. And a friend called me out on it. You know, we were just catching up and she said, you know, you've been saying the same thing for quite a while. I was telling her I felt pulled in a bunch of different
good
directions.
Friends, right?
Yeah. Good friend. Like that's rare for someone to actually kind of call you out on it. And I appreciated that a lot. And it was really a wake up call for me. And I started wondering, like, why am I saying the same thing over and over again? And why do I continually have these conversations in my head about what projects I really want to focus on, and I keep feeling like I'm not making progress and wasn't able to make any decisions. So basically, I just decided to announce out loud in public that I was wiping the slate clean and that I was going to force myself to make some decision, because I know of no greater motivator than telling
the
people.
Public accountability always wins out, right?
Public accountability. And so, in terms of like my own projects, I initially didn't know where this was going to go. And I honestly had everything laid out on the table as a potential thing that I would cut. And I did cut a lot. I deleted most of the old blog posts on my old website. And I deleted a lot of other like ancillary videos and so on. And what that allowed me to do was really focus on what was important. I kept peeling back the layers of the onion and getting rid of the scrub on the outside. And that allowed me to really shine a light on the things that were left. And I was inspired by another friend of mine who runs a really popular blog and social media presence, actually, Minimalist Baker, Dana Schultz. She had a couple of years ago reached a point of burnout in her project and decided to take a bit of a sabbatical to allow herself some time to think about it. And this is partly due to the grueling nature of publishing on a regular basis, putting out blog posts and videos and podcasts and so on. We all feel this at some point, this hamster wheel of content creation. And she wasn't able to think for herself anymore because she was, you know, beholden to the schedule. So she took a couple of months off and sort of did the same thing, evaluated everything. And at the end of the day, she decided to recommit. She decided that she loved her project. There were just some ways that she was going about it that made it feel burdensome to her. And just allowing herself the freedom to make a decision and to decide what she wanted to do next gave her a completely new relationship to that work. And I ended up feeling something similar, honestly, with my work. I recognized that I had too many projects going on and I'm actively working to find people to take over some of that work so that I don't have to think about it anymore because I had committed to too much. But the core project, the one that I had worked on for 7 or 8 years, Fizzle, it turns out that I actually really still love it. I love the work of it. I love the people involved. I love the customers and everything. And so I decided after this like 5 months of soul searching and talking publicly with people and canceling a lot of my social media and so on, that I wanted to jettison a lot of that cruft so that I could have time to focus on Fizzle, and I have decided to recommit to it. And that feels great. And I'm really glad that I've come to that decision. But I didn't know that that's where it was going. I just started like pulling the Band-Aid off here and there and looked to see what was underneath.
Well, that's a beautiful thing, man. I mean, that's part of the whole journey, right? You have to go through that. You could easily say, well, hey, maybe I could have just, you know, decided this months ago. But it's, you have to go through those things. And it's not easy. But feels good to recommit to something. I mean, I've had a similar experience fairly recently, and I was struggling with some of the same things that you've been talking about. So it's resonating pretty hard with me. But just that feeling of recommitting in a different way, it's not something that you can measure, but it's something you feel, right?
I think it all comes down to being able to allow yourself to visualize a future that is better than your present. Imagining, your work, your project, whatever, being more successful, imagining you having a better relationship to it, imagining showing up with more excitement and vigor and commitment to your work. If once you can visualize that future, then you can start working towards it again. And I think a lot of us get stuck. You know, up until this project, I had never spent more than, I think, slightly under 5 years in any one career, any one job. And that was a long time for me. And I think, yeah, you know, the same is true for most people, like 3 years, 2 years is kind of the average tenure in a job. And so here I was 8 years into a project, and I didn't know what that part of the roadmap was supposed to look like, because I had never gotten past 5 years. And every other time I had gotten burned out and just moved on to something else. So here I was in this new uncharted territory, and I never took the time to think about what I should expect. And I think it's natural to need to recommit to a project at that point. It's natural in a relationship, in a marriage, and so on. And just to, you know, and to your city, even sometimes we all get burned out on where we live, you know, and that's why a lot of us travel so much, I think. So that part of that recommitting for me really has just been about showing up with more energy and intention, because I feel like I can move forward. And that's when we produce our best work, when we're feeling energized and committed and like we are putting the time now because of something that will be rewarding later. And that can be a new project for some people. For some people, it just takes, you know, some clarity and refocus, I think, on the things that we already have.
Yeah. Hey, you lovely listeners, Jason here. And did you know we have a newsletter, and it's free? You can sign up over at zerototravel.com/newsletter. You're going to get money-saving tips, destination advice, some musings, little personal updates, all the stuff that you don't get right here on the podcast, and we can keep in touch. So sign up over there, zerototravel.com/newsletter. Get your weekly dose of travel value, totally free. Thanks for listening. I love that, and I love what you just said about applying this to different aspects of your life. It's true. I mean, yeah, right now I feel like I need to recommit to the city I'm living in, because this has been a long, cold winter. I'm a little sour. I was talking to one of my expat buddies, and we're just like, what are we doing here? It's freezing.
Yeah. And you're an expat. You know, could live anywhere. You're used to living all over the place. But of course we have family and, you know, people that we're committed to that are from a place, you know, and I'm lucky that I'm from Portland, Oregon, which is a great place to be from. And my wife and I moved back there because we have family there, but it does come with some downsides. And, you know, these are I don't know what middle-aged person problems, you know, like figuring out the city you want to live in.
Yeah. I mean, well, I think it's a good thing to reassess life on a regular basis and not just go through the motions. And when you make these dramatic decisions, like you just did with untethering from all the digital stuff, it, like we said, it forces a lot of questions and brings a lot of stuff up that's important and not always easy to face. You know, it's not that it's just uncomfortable. Sometimes you just don't really know where to start, in some ways you have to create your own frameworks to look at your own life. It's a lot easier to kind of talk with a friend and help them through something than it is to do it for yourself. You mentioned the framework you used for this decision pretty quickly. Do you find that to be difficult in general? Kind of, you know, okay, say you're giving yourself the space now. Sometimes it's even hard to know when you're even giving yourself the space to do something. Like if you're in the idea stage of a business, you're like, hey, I think I want to start something new. How much time do you give yourself? How much time should you spend researching? You know, I mean, that's like one specific example, but do you know what I'm getting at?
Well, yeah. And for me, I would say I was in that unlimited, you know, no time box sort of situation for a few years. And that's what caused me to start actually making some decisions. I was making excuses for every little thing that I thought I might want to pursue instead of making decisions and moving forward. And when I announced publicly, I sort of put what felt like a responsibility of me to come up with an answer for the people that I was emailing on my email list, you know. And I don't think it matters how big that email list is. In fact, you know, you could think of your 10 closest friends and email all of them and say, hey, look, I need some accountability. But I felt like I didn't have a specific timeline, but I knew that I needed to write people every few weeks and give them an update at least, let them know what was going on. And so eventually it kind of just came to a natural process. I also just kind of got in that mode of making decisions and not being afraid to cut something. So that I could, you know, recognizing that every time we say yes to something, we are implicitly saying no to other things because we only have so much time in the day. So by saying no to those things, I was giving myself more room to be able to say yes to the things that mattered. And when it came time to do my annual review this year, which, you know, a lot of people do, you think about what went right last year and what you want to do the next year. I came across an article by Tim Ferriss from the 4-Hour Workweek and everything else. He recommended actually just looking at your calendar week by week at the events that were scheduled. You could also look at your task list and think about the things that you did. But for every event or every task that you worked on, go week by week throughout the whole year and then put them in a couple of buckets. Put them in a bucket of hell yes, I love this. This was awesome. This lifted me up. This was a great experience. I want more of this. And put other things in a bucket of this was a drain on my energy. I dreaded doing it. I would love to never have to do that thing again. And then figure out ways to do more of the first bucket and less of the second bucket. And, you know, the second bucket might involve outsourcing some things, but it might also just be saying no. It might be saying no to certain kinds of meetings or things that end up on your calendar. And for me, I found that I really enjoy having conversations with people on podcasts like this. So I decided this year I'm going to be on a podcast every week. And I saw that.
You have 50 podcasts. Thanks for making mine one of them.
I'm super happy to be here. And I love it's just fun, you know, and you get exposed to new people and so on. So that's one of the things that I'm saying yes to this year. And I'm able to do that because I'm not spending time on Instagram or, you know, wherever else I might have been spending time.
It's not getting scrolled away and some.
Exactly.
Yeah. Where do you fall on the pursuing your passion versus finding the, you know, the business opportunity spectrum question?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll say this, it is hard to sustain passion about a topic or a project for a long time if you're broke. And you know, there are a lot of things that are fun and interesting to think about, but that will turn sour on you eventually if you can't make any money doing it. So, you know, to me, the ideal is a combination of both. It's something that you're really interested in. And that people will pay you for, that there's a business opportunity there. And of course, you never know completely like where the business opportunities lie, but it's worth thinking about. It's worth looking around to see if anyone else is successful in that space, whatever it is. You know, and on the passion side, likewise, you don't know if you're going to be passionate about something in 3 months or 6 months once you make it a daily pursuit. You know, the quickest way to ruin a pleasurable hobby is to turn it into a job in some cases, right? My ex-business partner, Chase Reeves, talked about how he decided at one point that he was going to be like the cigar guy because he enjoyed cigars and he wanted to like, you know, do reviews of them on YouTube or something, until he sat down for a week and realized that having to smoke multiple cigars every day isn't so fun. It's fun.
Like Kramer in that one Seinfeld episode, his face got all leathery and
yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, sometimes you have to kind of walk in the direction of a project for a while, start like wearing that project's shoes and see what it's like to walk a mile in it before you can really know whether or not there's a business opportunity, whether or not you like it, whether or not they're, you know, it's the right thing for you.
What's something that most people don't know about you, Corbett?
Give me some direction here. Like what do you want to know?
I don't know. It could be anything.
Well,
you said you've had many podcasts out there and, you're not afraid to put yourself out there. I'm just curious.
Yeah. I don't, you know, so, my Silicon Valley startup that crumbled sort of in the 2008 financial collapse when venture capitalists were scrambling to find the profitable investments and they had to cut the rest of them. We were left at a point where we didn't have revenue coming in. We were trying to build one of these like free services that you get a bunch of people. And we did have a lot of people, but not enough revenue to sustain. And when we weren't able to raise that additional money and we had to cut all our staff, my co-founder and I ended up in daily screaming matches at each other. And it was not fun. I feel like it probably took a year off of my life. It put us in a really horrible relationship standpoint and made me think about how people behave when things aren't going well and how you personally behave when things aren't going well. It made me think about the importance of finding a co-founder or partnering with people on projects, how important that is in choosing people. And it made me realize that I never wanted to part ways in that sort of situation with someone that I had worked with in any sort of context again. And I've made that a point. Chase, who I mentioned as my ex co-founder, we parted ways 3 years ago and it was completely amicable. You know, he told me one day he had other interests, things that he wanted to do. And I said, great. Like the most important thing is I want to make sure that we are friends after this. And we need to figure out a way to split things up so that we both feel good about it. And going in with that made those conversations and negotiations much better and put us off on a much better foundation, I'd say, for the next chapter, whatever that is. And I'm so glad because, like you mentioned, or actually somebody I was talking to earlier today mentioned Chase had a new podcast that just came out and he invited me to be the first guest and I was honored. And, you know, it's great to have friends who are doing really interesting things as opposed to enemies that you ended up in fights with. I finally caught up with that an initial co-founder just 2 weeks ago. He reached out and we hadn't talked in a decade. It was crazy.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, we've both got, you know, gray hair now and it's changed quite a bit. But it was great to catch up and to reminisce about things, but there's definitely some awkwardness there. We did have a conversation about a year after the business had fallen apart and we had had all those arguments and we came to it just laying all of our chips on the table and apologizing and so on. But still, there was a lot of damage done and so we haven't been able to be friends since then. So, you know, I think, as I said, that the lesson there is just to consider how you and other people are going to act when things aren't going well, because we all get into things, and this is true of relationships and marriages as much as it is co-founders, because co-founders are very much like spouses in a way, because you spend so much time together.
Yeah.
You have so many, you know, financial things that are tied up together. You just have to think about how things are going to go when things aren't going well. And how the relationship is going to survive and what you want it to be like after things end, because a lot of relationships do end.
Well, given your experience with what you just described, and you've had the positive experience with business partners. What is your advice for somebody that's considering taking on a business partner?
Yeah, it's interesting because Chase, my ex-business partner, actually brought up the idea recently of maybe he and I putting together a course on this for people that are thinking about finding a partner and how to get into the, you know, how to find someone, how to vet someone, and then how to structure the relationship. And for us, it meant, you know, legal contracts are never important until things go sideways, right? And I think a lot of people get into partnerships and they just say, you know, whatever, we're partners. And they just assume in their mind that means we're 50-50. 50-50 is a tough place to be because it means that you can't make decisions without arbitration or something because, you know, if you disagree, then you're stuck basically until you can work it out. It also means that what happens if someone leaves early and one person is really committed to the project and somebody else leaves? So, you know, in the VC world, in the startup world, they've thought a lot about this. This is why there are terms. There are things like vesting and other things that sort of protect people. But I think it's important to structure things up front. It also means that you are forcing yourself to have some difficult conversations up front and to make people, you know, people get very inflamed when they have to talk about their value that they're bringing to a project. And when, you know, maybe they thought they were more valuable than you were in a project, and then you propose to them, well, let's go 60-40 or something, and they get annoyed by it. Well, those are good conversations to have because those are difficult conversations. And eventually you'll have to have difficult conversations again. And that will give you some indication of how your relationship is going to go when things get difficult. So I recommend trying to have some of those things up front, those difficult conversations, and also protecting both of you so that the value that you bring to the business, the contributions that you bring, are recognized equally. You also don't know if you're going to need to leave at some point. And the goal of those negotiations up front is to make sure that everyone feels good about it and everyone feels protected in the scenario where the thing is dissolved.
Yeah, cool. No, I appreciate that. Thanks for sharing. What do you guys love about Mexico?
I had always romanticized Mexico, even though I had never spent that much time here. I just wondered, you know, I guess there are the old books you read about beatniks and so on, like spending time down here. Mm-hmm. And I think that just got lodged in my mind at some point that made me want to really get to know Mexico more. And now we've spent a cumulative maybe 4 years or so of my life in Mexico throughout various time. And I love, first of all, the people are so warm and so relationship-based, so family-based. I love that. If once you're friends with someone, with a Mexican, like you're family, you know, and that's a big deal. So I love that. I love that people get together every Sunday with their big extended family and, you know, have a big lazy dinner. That part of the culture here, I think, is just really fun. The food, of course. You know, the cuisine here, I would say, is if you think about world cuisine, it's up there. You know, everyone knows Mexican food, and there's a reason for that because it is unique. It's so flavorful. It's so simple in some ways, but so complex. You know, you think about the taco, it's like so incredibly simple, but a mole is so complex. And I love that dichotomy. And then, you know, being a person that appreciates cocktails, I love that they have invented tequila and mezcal, which are both incredible spirits and, you know, on the world stage as well. So there's so much to love about Mexico.
Yeah. What city are you guys in?
We're in a little tiny town on the Pacific coast that is between Puerto Vallarta, which a lot of people know, and further south would be Manzanillo. Our town is called Barra de Navidad, and it's just a little 10,000 person fishing, surfing, chill little hideout. It's kind of nice.
Do you surf or?
I do. Yeah. There's a surf break right here in town. And within driving distance, there's a ton of surf breaks. The Pacific coast of Mexico is blessed with tons of great surf breaks. And a lot of them are pretty uncrowded.
Is that one of your main sort of outside of work hobbies or what do you like to do?
It was. I would say that's one of the reasons that we came back here over and over again. Unfortunately, for the past two seasons, I've had a bit of a recurring shoulder injury that has really
put on the shoulders, man. I got terrible shoulders.
The shoulders are a very complex thing, and you take them for granted until you have an issue with them. So my outlet lately, believe it or not, I don't know, maybe you don't care, but has turned to pickleball, which is almost like if you could imagine a cross between tennis and ping pong. It's almost as if you're standing
fun as hell.
It's almost as if you're standing on top of a ping pong table that's quite a bit bigger, but it's actually between the size of a tennis court and a ping pong table, and you play with a firmer, it's a racket between tennis and pickleball in terms of its firmness and size. And the ball is like a wiffle ball. And what it does is it slows down the game of tennis quite a bit so that people of all different ages can play. And it makes it more strategy-based as opposed to just brute force. But also it can be really competitive depending on who you're playing with. So it's fun and it's really taken hold in North America. And so there's a court here. There's actually four courts here. And there can be up to like 40 people playing at once, and you know, several people waiting on sidelines.
I love that. I've never heard of that. It sounds like was that a movie by those South Park guys where like they invented a game and it made it big somehow? It sounds like a made up game, but you know, another great way to meet locals, right? Just go play pickleball. You're probably not going to see a lot of tourists playing pickleball.
Well, there's a lot of expats playing pickleball.
Okay, yeah.
But there are locals as well, and it's really super accessible, so it's catching on.
So when are you heading back to Portland?
We're going to head back this year. You know, there's the whole vaccine conversation and so on, and when we think we'll be able to get one. So I'm hopeful that when we get back, you know, they'll be vaccinating people up there. We're looking at like mid-April back to Portland. And the crazy thing is we live oceanfront here in Mexico, which is amazing. In Portland this last year, because of the pandemic, we decided to sell our house. We weren't sure about the economy and what we wanted to do next, where we wanted to live, and we figured there might be some opportunities. But in the meantime, we haven't found a new place to buy yet, but in the meantime, we found ourselves living on a floating home on the Willamette River, and it's been like crazy. It's super fun. It's a full-size house. You know, some people call it a houseboat, but it's really more like a house that's on a floating platform amongst about 30 other houses. And we have a boat that we keep tied up behind, and we just are living the river lifestyle. And when you look out the front of the house or sit out on the deck, you're like over the river, over the water there. It's not a bad thing to return to.
Yeah, man. Well, I mean, it's cool. Sounds like you've got a lot of interesting things coming your way, I guess. And you don't know where it's going, and that's always an exciting thing. And I just really appreciate you taking the time to give us some advice today around all this stuff and to share your experience with all of the digital rebooting that you've done. One last question. Well, actually two. Last book that you read that really made an impact on you. I always like a good book recommendation.
I'll give you this instead. I'll give you some perennial books that have had a lasting impact on me. And that is anything that's written by Jason Fried and David Hanemeyer Hansen, DHH. They run a company called Basecamp, and they've written several books. One is called Rework. And in thinking about my career trajectory and the pieces that started to fall into place when I was working on the first startup, but recognizing that that mode of working wasn't necessarily what I wanted from my life, those books, Rework especially, made me question everything and made me realize that you can question everything and that you don't have to do things just because either it's the way that you've done something forever or because everyone else does it that way. And I would say that that same line of feeling like I can question things and that probably everyone else is doing things wrong is what has led me to feel like I can clean up my digital house and leave a bunch of platforms and so on. Because just because everyone else is doing it doesn't mean that it's the right way for you.
Cool. Thanks for that. With that, I won't hold you from the pickleball court any longer.
Thanks.
Where do you want people to check you out? Is the best place CorbettBar.com?
Yeah.
The various links?
Exactly. I would say for this conversation and everything we've talked about, my latest thoughts are there.
Cool. Yeah, I found out about all of this from your email list, which I'm on, and that really caught my attention. So I reached out, and I'm really glad you took the time to come on and share your experience. So thank you once again so much, and hope we can keep in touch.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on. I love it.
Take care. There you have it, my conversation with Corbett. Thanks, Corbett, for stopping by and sharing your experience around an important topic. As we know, technology is a huge part of our lives, and I hope this episode gave you some new things to think about, maybe new ways to approach your relationship with technology when you're traveling, when you're at home. And I don't know, let me know if you end up doing your own digital reboot or taking some of this conversation and running with it yourself. You can always get in touch. Jason@zerototravel.com is my email. I want to say thanks to everybody who has listened to this show and taken the time to reach out and get in touch. This is always a two-way conversation, a community-powered show here. I talk about it often, and I love to hear from listeners. And please, if you have never gotten in touch, don't be shy. Reach out. Share your story. Let me know what's up. Okay, I'm going to give a shout-out to a listener who wrote me an email the other day, and then we're going to get into the other things I discussed at the top of the show, why to pay attention to your repetitive self, and also a nice way to start the day. But first, this shout out to my neighbor. I'm using that in air quotes because I got this message. It said, "A neighbor, thank you, and heads up for the future." It's from Linus, who's just over yonder, I would say, in Sweden. I'm here in Norway. He says, "Longtime listener of the podcast here, 23-year-old academic floorball player from Western Sweden. So we are literally neighbors. Just wanted to reach out because I love your work and show some appreciation. Your work has helped me a lot in my planning for what will come. I spent all my life in school training for my sport, which almost took me to an elite level, and worked at Volvo Cars when there was time." He said, "In June, I'm taking a 2-year master's degree in management and public administration, which is fun, but I'm not sure if it's for me. The pandemic resulted in a completely lost mind, and I don't recognize my mindset anymore. I've always dreamed of seeing the world, to leave everything, meet new people, see cities, and eat food I only heard of. That's what I'm doing now. I'm saving up cash and hopefully leaving in autumn." So, and he just says a lot more nice things at the podcast, and actually invites me to visit Gothenburg one day, which I've been to, and it's a lovely city. And I would certainly reach out if I'm there. It sounds like you're on your way, Linus, to a life of travel, maybe, or to a part of your life being travel. And it starts with that dream, right? Dreaming of seeing the world. You said leaving everything. Now you're actually saving up the cash and getting to do it. So I just want to give you a shout out and say congratulations for that decision, and to start working your way towards a trip. It all starts with one trip, right? Don't get overwhelmed with the, "Oh, I got to just travel for years," or I have to be nomadic or a certain thing, man. Just start with a trip. And that's what you're doing. Saving up cash. And you said, hopefully leaving in autumn. I don't like that word, hopefully, though. Hopefully leaving in autumn. You got to say leaving in autumn. So there you go. Well, congratulations. And this ties in with what I want to talk about, a nice little way to start your day. And this started for me today because I was doing some yoga this morning. I do yoga with Adrian on YouTube, so shout out to Adrian. And sometimes she mentions this. This is something I try to do as well. She kind of mentioned setting a little intention for the day. And I did that today. You know, my intention for the day was just to really be present with the things I was doing. For example, recording this podcast with you, I don't want to think about the other things I have going on or that I need to do, or the fact that it's snowing outside and it's spring, which is crazy. But just to be here present with you on the microphone, hanging out, or present in whatever activity I'm doing, which makes a huge difference, I think, for my state of mind, for just the enjoyment of the day, right? I just enjoy things so much more if I'm just present with those things and not being scatterbrained or trying to think about a million other things while I'm doing something else. If I'm making coffee, let me just make coffee, not think about all the other things I need to do while I'm making coffee. And anyway, it was a small intention for the day. And that's my challenge to you. You can set your own. Just pick a small intention for the day. It doesn't have to be an intention for your life, but just for that one day. And that's a nice way to start a day. And I love that that can change a little bit each day based on your mood and what you think you might need for that day, to give yourself a little love, some self-love there. So start your day with a little intention, a little thing that's helped me, and hopefully it helps you. Now, the last thing I want to share is this whole concept of why to pay attention to your repetitive self is what I called it. And this is something that came up in the interview when Corbett was talking about kind of feeling stuck and not being sure where things were going at a certain point in his life. And then a good friend called him out on it, you might recall, during the interview, and said, "Hey, you keep saying the same thing over and over again. You know, maybe this is something you want to change or consider changing." And that was a moment that stuck out to me, and many moments in this interview did. But that one in particular, I thought it would just be good to pull out and leave you with, because I think a lot of times this can happen to us, right? Where we are maybe saying the same things over and over again in our minds or out loud to people that we know, but not really doing anything to change them, right? And I was just thinking, well, have I been saying anything over and over again? Is there something I should be paying attention to? I just think this idea of paying attention to our repetitive self, what are the things that we're repeating over and over again? But maybe those things need a little space to work through or to figure out. I think it's easy to kind of miss those things sometimes. And Corbett mentioning a good friend that called him out on that. And that's always helpful when we have, those are good friends. Like I said in the interview, those are the people that, you know, they're not afraid to call you out on your stuff. But also we have to pay attention so we can call ourselves out, because we can't count on other people to always do that for us. So that's it. It's just a thought experiment, I guess. Is there anything, and I'm asking this question to myself as well, is there anything that you have been repeating over and over again that might need some attention paid to it, or might demand some answers? So let's pay attention to our repetitive selves, shall we? The things that we may be saying over and over again a little too much that are potentially problems or challenges that maybe can be solved if we just pay them a little attention, give them a little love. And that self-love every day is key, isn't it? I don't want to get all, you know, new agey here or anything, whatever you want to call it. But hey, we all need a little bit of love every single day, right? And that love's got to come from ourselves first and foremost. So do something for yourself today. Give yourself a little love. And I'm going to pull something out of the quote drawer. I wonder what it is going to be. Will it be tied in with everything we've talked about today? Let's see if the magic is here. Mahatma Gandhi, quote from him, good start, who said, "The end to be sought is human happiness combined with full mental and moral growth." There you have it. I'll leave you with that quote from Mahatma Gandhi. Thank you so much for hanging out with me today, being a part of this community. Peace and love, and I'll see you next time, my friend. Cheers.
This podcast has been brought to you by ZeroToTravel.com. Ideas and advice to make your travel dreams a reality.